on. There we go. Now I'm on. So back up 1 minute, back up 90 seconds, 2 minutes. Go back to how you were feeling when that was being read. Okay? Not what you're thinking, but how you're feeling and how it affected you viscerally. How did it make you feel? We're all doomed? Okay. Other feelings? It made you angry? Okay. Other feelings? Heavy-hearted? Stressed out? Sick to your stomach? The gospel of the Lord, right? I know that, my initial reaction with this is feels really harsh and it feels really punitive, right? This is Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. He's been giving this sermon for 3 Sundays in a row now, and here we are, and he's like, if you say you fool, you're liable to the fires of hell, right? You can imagine some street corner preacher preaching fire and brimstone. And that's because, and hell comes up there a couple of times in it, right? And with hell comes all these associations we have of Dante and John Milton and this place of conscious eternal torment. And that if you just say you fool, you're liable to eternity in hell, right? If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out, right? There's a certain amount of hyperbole here, I submit, that Jesus is doing, because if everybody was plucking out their eyes every time they lusted, we'd all be blind, right? If we were cutting off our hands every time we sinned, we'd be handless, right? I don't think Jesus meant that intentionally. I don't think he meant it literally. It's curious, the words we use for hell. There are lots of words that are used in Greek and Hebrew for the afterlife place that all gets translated in the English word hell. In the Hebrew Bible, in the Old Testament, the word was Sheol, which was the place of the dead. Everybody went there. Whether you were good or bad, it wasn't a place of torment or suffering or bliss. It was just a place where the dead went. That's Sheol. So that's in the Old Testament, and that often gets translated as hell, and that's not quite what our image of hell is, just the place where the dead go. The Greek in the New Testament, Hades is used, which is, in Greek culture, that was the place of the dead. It's equivalent of Sheol. Everybody went to Hades, whether you were good or bad. Everybody went to Hades. There are different places in Hades. Some were better. Some parts of the geography of Hades were better than others. Location matters. But, it was still the place of the dead. What's curious, one time in 2 Peter, the word Tantalus is used for hell, which is, Tantalus in Greek culture was the place where the demons and the angels go to, purify themselves for their sins or place. The most common word used is Gehenna, and that's what Jesus uses in Matthew. And Gehenna means the Valley of Hinnom, which was a place outside of Jerusalem. And way before Jerusalem became the city of David, back when they worshipped other gods and they worshipped Moloch and gods like Moloch and Baal, those gods demanded child sacrifice. And so the Valley of Hinnom was the place where children were sacrificed to God, literally sacrificed to God, right? So this is before Jerusalem becomes the city of David, but it still has that association. It's a terrible, awful place. And then later, as it is the city of David, it becomes the trash heap, the rubble heap, right? Where, dead things, trash are thrown out and then burned. So that's the Valley of Gehenna outside of Jerusalem. So, and the word in Greek is Gehenna, right? It doesn't say hell, it says Gehenna. When Jesus says, and clearly this is an awful place, clearly this is a place where trash is thrown out and dumped and things are burned as a way of getting rid of them. And there's these negative associations. But when Jesus says Gehenna, he does not mean what Dante says when Dante says hell. That's 1,500 years later in the development of Christianity. What Jesus means is not necessarily saying a place of eternal torment. We've come to believe that. That's what, in the development of Christian theology, that happens over time, and you can see how that develops over time in Christian thought, in Catholicism and then in Western Protestantism. It's not clear that that's what Jesus meant when he said it. Jesus is here talking about the law. Right? And, last week Jesus said, I haven't come to abolish the law. I've come to fulfill the law. And the law was actually seen as a good thing. In our Old Testament reading, it comes from Moses. The law is seen as a blessing. When Moses says, you know, thou shalt not kill, right? It's really hard to live into community with each other. That if you're killing people, that messes things up, right? So if you want to flourish, don't kill each other, right? Thou shalt not steal, same thing. If you want to be on good terms with your neighbors, don't steal their stuff. Thou shalt not commit adultery, same thing. If you really want to love your neighbor, don't go after your neighbor's wife, right? Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Take a day of rest. Don't work all the time. Love, you know, don't take the Lord's name in vain. Honor your father and mother. Don't covet stuff. Don't tell lies about your neighbor. Thou shalt not bear false witness. These laws, right, which many people see as, you know, these are the Ten Commandments, they're actually, the intention behind them is that there be blessing, that you be blessed by these things. And Moses says this in our Old Testament reading that was read up here.
Of the Lord your God that I am commanding you today, by loving the Lord your God, walking in his ways, and observing his commandments, decrees, and ordinances, then you shall live, and you shall become numerous. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to possess. God gives them these laws as they're about to enter this land for their own flourishing, for their own well-being, for their good. But if your heart turns away and you do not hear but are led astray to bow down to other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall perish. You shall not live long in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life on one hand if you follow the law and death on the other if you don't. Blessings in terms of following the law and curses if you don't. So choose life, that you and your descendants may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying him, and holding fast to him, for that means life to you and length of days, so that you may live in the land that the Lord swore to give to your ancestors, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob.
That's what Moses says about the law, right? It's blessing. And he's not saying you better obey the law so that way you can get to heaven. And if you don't obey the law, you're going to be thrown into hell. Moses never says that. Moses never equates following the law with getting to heaven and not following the law and going to hell. Doesn't say it anywhere, right? Which is, you would think, is really important. If that's really what was important to God, that's the moment to say it. But Moses doesn't say that. He says, if you want to live well in this world, follow these laws. Because otherwise you're going to be cursed. You're not going to flourish. Your crops won't do well. You won't have good relations with your neighbors. Your kids won't flourish. It's very pragmatic. It's very this worldly. So that's the context Jesus is coming from, right? When Jesus is saying, you know, you've heard it said, you shall not murder. He's saying, okay, let's take that seriously because we're missing the blessing, right? If you're standing at the altar and you're about to worship God and while you're trying to love God, you are hating your neighbor, that's a problem. Because your hatred of neighbor is going to get in the way of your being able to love God very well. So he says, so stop. If you're at the altar about to make a sacrifice, leave your offering at the altar. Go and reconcile with your neighbor. Love, correct the discord, correct the dissonance, correct whatever's happening between you and your neighbor so that you're free then to love your neighbor and then you'll be free to love God. And so Jesus said, you've heard it said, you shall not murder, but I say to you, even if you're angry, if you have contempt for your neighbor, like if you say to them, you fool, you're liable to judgment, you're liable to the fires of hell, or you're liable to the fires of Gehenna. Throw that thing away. Put it on the trash heap. Let the fires of Gehenna burn it. that anger, that hatred, that contempt that you feel, throw it out. Throw it on the trash heap. Let it be burned. Let it be purified so that you can come and worship God and love your neighbor. You've heard it said, you should not commit adultery. But I say to you, if you look at a married woman, and the word in the Greek is married woman. It says specifically married woman. If you look at a married woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery with her. I mean, he could have used other words to talk about all women. He says specifically married women. Don't look lustfully at a married woman because she's already married. She's somebody else. Respect the bonds of marriage between that man and that woman. Don't try messing that up. Because, you know, it's a failure of love. It's a profound failure of being able to love. And you know, he's trying to say, this is so serious that, you know, if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. And people are like, whoa, what? Yeah, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. I mean, Jesus is being, again, hyperbolic as a way of just getting their attention and saying, no, this thing about love is really important. This thing about honoring each other is really important. And it gets in the way, right? When those failures of love happen, throw them onto the trash heap. Let them burn. Burn away the chaff. Burn away so that you can have fruit. Because you are salt and you are light. You're the salt of the earth and you're the light of the world. That was last week's passage. Right? Live as salt and light. Live as people who are learning how to love. Right? Destroy these things that are getting in the way. Get rid of them. Let yourself be free of them. So that you can be people of God in this world. We're about to have a baptism, right? We're about to initiate Isaac into the community of God's beloved, right? We're going to bring him before these waters. Right? And these waters are symbolic of washing away sin, right? Of washing Isaac and his whole one, all those sins that Isaac has committed in his 1 year of life, right? We're going to wash those away. We're going to wash away any vestige of original sin that's still lurking there, right? We're going to wash those away. We're also going to wash away any and every future sin that he's ever going to have, right? This young boy will have moments in his life where he will love profoundly. He will have moments in his life where his voice will sing praise and he'll be in awe of the beauty of God. He'll have moments where he is so kind and gentle and his heart is so filled with compassion for the people around him, that he will love them well. He'll have moments where he'll be able to love himself and feel good about who he is in the world. But this boy will have that capacity of love. He will be God's son. He will be God's child. And he's going to have moments where he's not loving God very well at all. And he's really failing at loving his neighbor. And he may even fail at loving himself. But you know, part of what we as Christians believe is, you know, that's the journey. That's the spiritual journey. We're taking him. We're going to wash all that away. Right? He's being grafted into the body of Christ with us here today to begin his life as a child of God, as a son of God. That's a journey we're all on, by the way. That's a journey we've all been on, right? All of us have. Most of us, actually, not all of us, but most of us have had those waters washing us. And those waters wash us, those waters washing us resound through time. They echo through time, bringing us deeper into love. So I'm going to say, let's do it. Let's baptize this little guy. Let's bring him into the kingdom of the body of believers here. And I, you know, I believe that God already does love him. I don't believe that what we're doing changes God's attitude towards him. But I believe that it's, you know, in many ways, this is for our benefit. So I'm going to invite you to stand and let's sing.